To feed the world, you have to be as efficient as you can be. And Canada, definitely on the right track for that. I don't think anybody in the world can beat us. Keep the capital coming in, investing prop into the equipment, because we have the young entrepreneurs coming up that have the global picture and that can produce and compete globally.
Let's talk about geopolitics a little bit, because I'm thinking, well, you're a little bit of a harbinger of doom on climate or whatever, related to science, natural cycles. But geopolitics, are you watching what's happening in Ukraine and Russia? Did you anticipate that? Is that having a big effect?
I didn't anticipate Ukraine. Nobody can anticipate any one country. I did anticipate geopolitical problems. Yes. In my initial research, going back 13, 15 years ago, like I have a big long formula where you plug in these numbers, whether it be climate change, geopolitical, or whatever, economic differences and countries opting in and out of free trade and becoming more blocks to themselves and so on. And so I did anticipate geopolitical change, but did I give it that much weight? Most of it, yes.
Do you think the agricultural production in Ukraine being threatened now and perhaps a very long time in the future, eastern Ukraine is the most mined place on planet Earth now? It's very tough to farm there. It's very tough to get product out, be very tough to get supplied. Is that factor into your formula?
Well, it definitely does. Yes, that's one component, and that can't be corrected that easily. Even if they settle the war today, you got 5-7 years before things can get back to anything that's considered normal prior to the war. And that goes for Russia as well. And I don't think commodities, traders in agriculture are giving it enough weight. Like, who's fighting that war? Who's dying in that war? The Russians. Where do those kids come from? They come from farms and urban and other country areas. They were helpers and they were working in the farm fields and so on. If I took half of your workforce away, can you do that, produce as much as you do, or can you farm as much as you're farming? No. So, and never mind Ukraine, that's where their farm fields are mined and the ports are mined and the whole infrastructure is destroyed. So yes, it'll have a big effect on world production, as will the climate change.
Yeah, and it's not just a restructuring of the production. I think it's a restructuring of the flow of output as well, as we see this division sort of between the West and what's becoming BRICS and a whole different emerging alliance.
Well, that's the whole thing now. You're dismantling everything, the whole entire supply chain from the raw products, commodities, to the finished goods. That includes our transportation systems and how the whole thing was designed to transport goods from point A to point B. Now, that no longer works if somebody else is the supplier. So what you're going to have now, you have the breakdown of the global trade, and you're going to have the blocks, trading blocks. U.S., Canada, Australia, Europe, and so on. And then you're going to have the other blocks, China. I don't know where India falls, but you're going to have China, Russia, Brazil, and a bunch of other ones on the other side. But that whole supply chain has to be changed. And that's why I say there's so many problems, 50 problems to correct that, as opposed to prior recessions where you had 4, 5, 6 problems to correct, and we're back to normal. That's why we won't be back to normal for dozens of years.
That's why I wonder, haven't we won the lottery, Robert, you by getting across the border and getting to Canada, me being born on the Manitoba-Saskatchewan border, where we're going to be one of the beneficiaries of climate change, where we got a relatively robust banking system. We got all the infrastructure to transport things out. We got folks we can bring into the country to help. We've got great technology here, and we can produce. And we're an island. North America is an island unto itself. I mean, didn't we get the best of all worlds here?
Well, if I had to pick someplace in the world, I wouldn't go anywhere else. Let's put it that way. So needless to say, I agree with my dad's decision to choose Canada.
Turned out good.
Like when I look at the other ones and going back to global disruption, like you look at, let's say, Germany, for example, the gas, the oil and gas being natural gas being shut off, that affects the whole manufacturing base. So you can't correct that. Who's going to make up the difference? Like that's not, doesn't happen overnight. And then China has got their real estate problems, huge real estate problems. Australia has the same thing. U.S. definitely. So now when you talk about that lag effect of increase of the Fed increasing interest rates, and that we're just at the beginning of that increase cycle because of the lag effect of a year to two years, let's say. So not all mortgages in like the commercial real estate mortgages come up for renewal. But let's say your mortgage comes up for renewal today and you had a mortgage of 3% from way back. Now all of a sudden it's 7-8%. You can't increase rates. The other thing is that you got vacancy in there, 25-30% vacancy. So you don't even have enough to service the other mortgage, never mind the new one at double and almost triple the rate. That's where I say the lag effect. It's not just because they increase the interest rates, that doesn't mean the whole economy gets the effect of it right away.
It will be when everything resets. It has to reset on certain terms
for renewal. Everything is resetting as we speak, but in segments. Like if your mortgage was 5-year mortgage and expires this year, well, then you're on the hook for that. Now, what's happening because of the COVID and the work from home and everything else, that's the reason you have the 25-30% vacancy in commercial real estate. And that 25-30% vacancy is a handicap already. That means when a landlord has that, like you own that building, you have to take over all the common area costs. Common area costs being taxes, real estate taxes, all the main common areas inside, snow removal, lawn maintenance, roof repairs, everything else that would go to somebody else, unless I come back to you. At 30% is a lot. I've done some calculations, and in worst-case scenarios, even if you have a building that's clear title, you don't owe anything on it, the common area cost, you taking back all those common area costs with the vacancy and everything else will put you under.
That's a spooky prospect if you own it and can't keep it.
Well, that's what's coming down the pipe. Like, I can't now. All that being said, people think I'm negative. I've grown the most during recessionary times. That's when I took over the Winnipeg industrial field and grown the most during other periods like the 90s and so on. So there'll be great opportunities.
Well, let's touch on some of the policy. I think you're pretty in tune with some of the policy, and we'll get into that. But if you're Germany and you've got to choose between fertilizer production and heating your home because the Russians are shutting off the tap, but you're a dreamer. You got to save the world because you got environmentalists that are picketing outside your window. But 85% of the world's energy still comes from coal and all that, and these technologies can't necessarily keep up. Isn't that adding fuel to the fire just because you want to have solar and wind power and feel good about all that?
We definitely didn't think that whole energy issue through clearly. Because before you shut the tap off on something, and if you needed that to begin with, you have to figure out what you're going to replace it with. And we have not done that. We're in la-la land as far as that's all concerned. Getting a wake-up call, and we're being forced to go back to the dirtiest energy instead of being at least, like, let's say, if we would have made the provisions and natural gas at least, which is a little cleaner. Like, you do it in incremental portions. You don't do it all of a sudden without having a replacement for it. So yes, that's why Germany is paying a very high price. No LNG is going to replace it. Number one, cost, the shipping routes and everything else. Where does it originate from? How does it get there? The ports, can they handle it? And so on, if they can't. They're not ready for it.
I have heard from a friend who works at Manitoba Hydro. Well, number one, there's a tremendous amount of infrastructure in this province that needs to be upgraded and replaced to facilitate more energy. And it's just not there. And that dictates how much can be exported and obviously the overall price, supply and demand. But number two, I also heard an interesting thing that he said that Saskatchewan's bringing back in nuclear. I think that's an interesting sea change.
Well, if the whole world would have looked at it that way, I'd say nuclear would be the most logical and cleanest replacement. Yes, like we did those converter stations where the power comes from. It's transported, I think, direct current, and then it's converted into the other one, alternating current, and so on before it can be used. So we did those converter stations. And I know the components, they took years to get manufactured and everything. So we only have X amount of cushion, like to even take care of the electric vehicles to plug in and everything. We don't have much surplus there. So he's right. Absolutely. I agree with him 100%.
I was listening to Donald Trump talk about how they want to make electric tanks. And he said, can you imagine? We're going to go over these countries in electric tanks and we're going to blow the shit out of everybody, but at least we'll be environmentally friendly. I mean, this is the kind of sentiment that's affecting perhaps common sense that it almost seems absurd. And this is, you sent me an email with your take on environmental social governance. And for those of us who are, you know, flogging an environmentally friendly fertilizer, we're excited about the future being greener in a common sense fashion. But what you're talking about with ESG, what's in Europe and what's coming here, it is a frightening Orwellian type of future, is it not?
Well, again, they're looking at from a point of view, just ideology with no idea how to keep the economy or anything running. Again, they'll do the same thing what happened with the oil and gas industry. If we let them, well, there's very little money being invested by the institutions and so on into oil and gas companies, and it's being diverted elsewhere. And there's very little drilling going on. So ultimately, it's a dwindling resource that isn't being replaced, and yet the demand is all there and growing, okay? So how do you justify that too?
Well, hopefully that's bullish for commodities, but you're talking to a lender in Europe who's saying there's activists picketing outside their window. And if you're saying here, it's almost like it could be a social credit system whereby if you haven't filled out the proper forms and if you're not proving your carbon footprint and you're not doing this and that, yada, 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 you might not get financing. And I already know for a fact that lenders are starting to, like, we have a program with FCC, 3-year financing on our input because it's carbon footprint friendly. That's great. But if it becomes a limiting factor to get lending or a restriction of capital based on that, where is that going?
Well, you will have to comply, as in the entire agriculture industry. It doesn't matter whether it's agriculture or commercial real estate. They're already trying to make the buildings all eco-friendly and with the right amount of insulation, right windows, right this, that. So it's all going that route. And the trouble is, like, these companies, the lenders, they don't want to go on the limb. They want to comply as much as they can. They don't want those protesters outside their buildings and protesting that you funded a company XYZ that is doing some of that environmental damage or something.
Yeah.
So they don't want to be associated with them. So that's why they want to take off their little boxes. Well, you've done this right. You've done that right. You got your loan. You didn't do it. Well, can you do it? Or can you correct it or so before we fund it? Yes, it's going there.
Given that it's cyclical, though, and people will want to implement these policies. But I think we've seen in the net effect in Canada, if you're a single mother on fixed income, That's who's really getting hurt. That's who can't afford groceries. And you go to the grocery store, you know what I've heard? They don't even stop people stealing groceries anymore right now because it's dangerous, because people can't afford the food. And will that not create a sea change in politics and perception where it goes back the other way? Or how do you see, is it cyclical with people like the sun, or how does that work?
Well, it may slow it down, but I don't think it'll change it. The environmental movement is just too strong, and they don't pay attention enough to the consequences or solutions. They don't think it through completely. If they did, they never would have done to the oil and gas industry what they're doing. We're on a slippery slope down with the oil and gas. I can easily see once the economies pick up again and everything else, like years down the road, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, $150, $200 oil.
Yeah. Are you then bearish on commodities still? I just talked to an analyst that was got some downside targets for most stuff on the last podcast. Isn't this all really bullish for commodity prices, and don't we stand to benefit?
Well, it's a supply demand issue. If your demand is going up still and there are no supplies being added, I'm talking oil and gas and so on, well, three guesses where the price goes. Because yeah, your demand's going up. It is still going up, even in today. Right now. And yet there's no new fields being produced. And that goes for most commodities. Doesn't matter whether it's steel, aluminum, copper, nickel, whatever. See, the whole supply chain has been destroyed. Like at one time, we used to have Russia as a main supplier of commodities when they used to trade commodities and everything else. A lot of stuff came from Russia, South America, and the rest of the world. But Russia was a big supplier. So they sold us cheap commodities, raw commodities. They went to China. China refined them and finished them, and we got the finished goods from them on the cheap again, and they sold it to the rest of the world. That's what kept our inflation down. But now all that supply is chain is broken, and we have to replace it. And you do not replace that in 1 year, 2 years, or 5 years. It took us 20, 30 years of, well, since the Second World War to get to where we're at. But that was all broken in 2020.
I don't really see you as being a negative individual. I see you as someone who's done the science, who's looked at the research, and you're a realist. What do you think is going to be the big opportunities, both in conventional production, but also we talk about ESGs and carbon credits and stuff like that? How are you? There must be some opportunities in there for people that, hey, they love all this so much, you're going to get paid for it.
Well, there'll be a lot of opportunities in, let's say, carbon credits and so on. Once we come to grips with quantify and verify what your carbon footprint is. I'm talking in agriculture especially.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can sell carbon credits to the rest of the industry. So yes, you can benefit that way. Repatriating industries.
Mm.
So in other words, they're already doing it today. Most of the, I used to invest in the Taiwan Semiconductor. They produce most of the chips out of Taiwan, and now they're being repatriated back into USA. So, but what's that going to do? That's why I say it's going to take us years to muddle through all this and correct these problems. Because what do you have? You have to put new equipment in, new buildings. Yes, you will get technology and get some cost cutting from the robotics, the artificial intelligence, and everything else that goes into it. But you still need people. Do we have the trained workforce? No, we don't anymore. What's the workforce going to look like? What are they going to get paid? Yeah, they'll get 3, 4, 5 times more than they got back in other countries. Therefore, inflation and so on. So it'll take us a long time to get and muddle through all this because there's such major structural changes.
I wonder, do you see it as an opportunity that some of the hewing of wood and hauling of water, and you even talk about these semiconductors and stuff, is getting repatriated? Is it a lot of opportunity out there that it's coming back home and we need to supply ourselves and the world has changed?
Yes, but is the public ready to pay the price in inflation for those products being made locally rather than sourced from other countries. That's what we have to deal with. And we really don't have any choice, because what we've already learned is that we have to make more products locally, no matter what the cost is, if you want the products.
Don't you think, though, that technology and robotics and automation, artificial intelligence, replacing over time a lot of things that human beings used to be able to do, being able to do these things better, won't that create an abundance in goods and services like we've never seen before, that we can't imagine, and people might just be bored and wonder what their purpose is because they don't have anything to do?
You still need people, and it's a huge capital outlay, huge, not just buildings, but equipment and so on. Number one, and the other number, like we talked about Germany and them not being able to supply the finished goods, that manufactured goods that they were doing. Most of that equipment comes from Germany and Japan and the rest of the world.
Yeah.
They can't even, who's going to supply that equipment? They can't do it anymore since their gas and oil supplies are cut off.
Is there then a market that you're potentially looking at going back into, or going into a new market, Robert, with the coming recession, depression / opportunity?
Well, there'll be a tremendous, like anybody that figures out what to do with the existing buildings that are going to be empty. There will be buildings that will be empty and have to be bulldozed. Commercial real estate I'm talking about throughout U.S. and Canada. Okay, so what do you do with them? Are you going to put to residential? Like a lot of people talk about taking those office buildings, converting them into residential. Well, they've never done a building, never converted a building. Number one, like, where's your sewer water? How do you service all that? There's different needs for it. What are your fire escapes like? Firewalls and the rest, the sprinkler systems and everything comes together, everything's done wrong. I've tried to convert buildings lots of times, because sometimes I bought land, like let's say Labatt site in Winnipeg, that was 32 acres, and they had new buildings that were 10 years old only. And I tried to incorporate them into something, couldn't do it. Ended up demolishing it. I didn't demolish it, Labatt's did. But they end up demolishing everything and starting from scratch, because you didn't have the right loading area. You had the right car parking areas, right? You couldn't locate buildings in the right locations and everything. So that same thing is going to apply, my guess is, to commercial real estate. There'll be some attempts to convert them, but it's very, very difficult. Anybody that's done a building will tell you that.
Interesting. Well, you alluded to the fact that workers aren't going back to work. And that was obviously a result of the COVID shutdown around the world. How did that whole time in our history, which has aged in a very interesting way, let's say, how did COVID factor into your complex calculations for the future there? How did you view that event?
COVID actually didn't. I knew we were ready for a pandemic. Because the last one, I think, was the Spanish flu and stuff like that. That goes back a long way. So I knew we were ready for it, but I didn't know the effects. I never anticipated that not going back to work. That I thought it would be, yes, for time being, you wouldn't go, but then you'd go back. But right now, the way it looks, 1/3 of the workforce will not go back.
Well, it's reshaped people's behavior so much. And the fascinating thing was how people spent during it. It seemed like everybody went on a bit of a spending spree, changed their behavior. Now things are back to normal and we don't really think about it as much, but maybe it accelerated some of the coming changes.
What happened, of course, the governments gave out a lot of money. They printed a lot of money and they gave out a lot of money in the general public, and we're still cruising on that.
It's kicking the can down the road, isn't it? I mean, when you can only run the American government for another 45 days before you have another kind of showdown.
Well, that's a different...
scary stuff, eh?
Can of worms. But what I'm getting at, all the money that they spend during COVID, giving it to the public and redistributing all the money, printing and everything, we're still cruising on that. Ultimately, that'll come to an end, and that's when I anticipate the recession kicking in. And first of all, it's I don't know what the trigger mechanism will be. It could be commercial real estate, let's say. Right now, commercial real estate is affecting China in a real bad way. And again, like I alluded before, there's Australia's in a similar boat, U.S. definitely. And commercial real estate will take down a lot of U.S. regional banks. They're insolvent. They don't want the public to know that, of course, because they don't want to run on the banks. But they are basically insolvent. Because when I look at it and I talk to my friends in, doesn't matter where, San Francisco, Atlanta, or New York, or wherever, those buildings, let's say a building is worth $1 million, just numbers. The guy was able to get a $750,000 mortgage on it. Now with the vacancy rate in there and everything, that building's worth only $600,000. The investor lost all his capital that he put in, and even the lender's losing. And that's the case with very large amount of office space, mostly Class B and C and the lower space. Class A is a little different in that it'll be affected, but nowhere near to the degree of Class B, C, and D, and so on space.
Is Bank of Montreal going to be okay?
To tell you the truth, they're all going to take a haircut, but our banks are a little different. Well, no question. They're all invested in commercial real estate. And that's where, when I used to take my trips to Toronto, and for past, 12 years now, 13 years, I've been talking and meeting with them and telling them the difference, showing them the difference between commercial real estate and agriculture as a whole. Doesn't matter, value added, included, and everything. From producer level right up to the value-added finished goods level, where it's a lot different. And they are, like right now, a lot of banks are looking to what is the safest haven. Agriculture is it. The only thing is that agriculture is nowhere near sophisticated or as advanced from an investor's point of view. There's no vehicles of investment, like there's no REITs. The commercial real estate is REITs. It has all kinds of different investment vehicles where agriculture doesn't. That's the problem with it at this stage.
But doesn't that speak to the fundamental argument of the fellow on the internet who's, I think, more or less a detractor of having outside investors like yourself drive up farmland so their son...
Oh, you have to. Otherwise, no capital, there's nobody is going to get it. See, what I'm afraid of, what nobody's really addressing at this stage, let's take the U.S. as an example. The regional banks and so on, they're going to have problems. Now they have to recapitalize. They have to, because to meet the banking regulations, it's usually a 10-to-1 ratio. $1 that comes in as a deposit, they can lend 10 out. Yeah. So now when they get those bankruptcies, failures, and so on, that'll deteriorate their capital base. They'll have to recapitalize. The only way they can recapitalize is either through deposits, new deposits, or some other form, lend less and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're going to stop lending. That's coming down the road next. So everybody thinks, well, their interest rates are going to go down and this and that. And then they figure, well, things will be back to normal. No, they won't be. Interest rates could go back to zero. But if capital is not available, you're not going anywhere.
Wouldn't agriculture be one of the safe havens for lending, given the stability?
Again, I'm talking the rest of the economy. Agriculture is definitely on its own with a preferred investment view by the rest of the lenders. Agriculture is not included. They will be included, not totally, but it will be included in, let's say, they'll want more collateral or something, a little bit more, because once they get burned so much on the other end, they always tighten up the regulations a little. So they'll want more collateral, you to pledge more collateral. And then instead of going 75%, they go 70%, let's say, or something. With you coming a little bit more, pledge more collateral to them. But in U.S., those loans won't be available at all. Especially when it when you're talking the commercial real estate.
It'll be good to have cash then, except if it's in a bank that goes broke.
Well, it'll be good to have cash. It'll be good to be innovative and give edge. Like with my knowledge of industrial buildings and, well, we were in everything, office, industrial, retail, all kinds of stuff. So I know them all, how to convert them and make them useful again.
Won't the governments just step in and print more money like every time in the past and kick the can down the road? Or are we running out of that option?
Running out of those options.
Yeah.
I thought that would come to an end a while back. I didn't think they could even go this far. But right now, what's happening, it's, I'd say USA, is the cleanest dirty shirt. Chinese investors, big guys with money, they're looking at, well, China's having a problem. Maybe, we'll again, they go to US. It's winning by default. It's not winning because it is the best solution. So a lot of money is coming into US from the rest of the world because of the rest of the world has even bigger problems. Hmm. If I had to say, like, Canada and U.S., they're about the least problems. Rest of the world still feels it's a safe haven.
What is going to happen with farmland? I mean, 17% increase? It just boggles.
Yeah, well, where are you at? How far are you from, let's say, Alberta, that's at 6,000-7,000, and you still have price?
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So, and like I said, I do equal production. If they do 50 bushel per acre canola, they get the same price. The only difference might be a little bit of shipping costs.
Are you going to be able to buy land and remediate it like we have been doing in the past, do you think? You're going to be able to push trees and drain? And
well, see, I'm not in a business. Everybody thinks, well, we're removing all the trees just to gain land. No, that's not true, because it costs me more money to gain that 2 acres than I could buy. I could buy like a 2 acres into quarter section, 160 acres, so 80 times. I could buy that quarter section, 160 acres, cheaper than for me to reclaim 160 acres. It'll cost me quite so much. The idea is efficiency. So when I remove those 10 2-acre bluffs, that 100-foot cedars don't have to go snake through all that stuff. They can go straight back and forth and get some efficiency.
Yeah,
I have other land, let's say 100 quarter section, and that 140 is cultivated, that we can we'll let it grow back into poplars and everything else to offset that, what we cleared. So we're doing offsets already.
Yeah. Where do you see regenerative and organic agriculture fitting in?
Well, it has a place, but a niche place. It's not going to feed the world, okay? In order to be, to feed the world, you have to be as efficient as you can be. And Canada is definitely on the right track for that. I don't think anybody in the world can beat us. All we have to is
good to hear.
Keep the capital coming in, investing into the equipment, the best equipment possible, because we have the young entrepreneurs coming up that have the global picture and that can produce and compete globally.
I always think it's really interesting, you as a group with 231,000 acres, that's a lot of buying power. That's a lot of opportunity to deploy technology. That's a lot of opportunity to put people's noggins in. Have you thought about a peer group, a buying group, deploying technologies or products hint across the whole acreage? Is that, or is everybody a kind of a lone wolf?
Well, with maybe 231,000, but we rent land to by the 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 max. So all the big producers, they may rent 5,000 acres from us, but they have 25, 30,000 of their own. So we're not a united like somebody that can move the needle because of volume. We have lots, but we don't have it under production, under one control. Like the different producers, and that they depend on us. Like they have the equipment and they need that 5,000 acres from us to fully utilize that equipment on the 35,000. If I take 5,000 acres from them, they're over-equipped. We work together already, but in different segments with different producers. And a lot of our land is under research and so on for different purposes and testing different equipment as because of all those producers that rent from us are in those programs. Doesn't matter whether it's the latest equipment from John Deere, New Holland, or Case, or whoever. Actually, all of them are working with different tenants.
You have a criteria for land. What is your criteria for tenants and working with folks?
That's just as complicated. You need a like-minded thinking individual that wants to be progressive and that believes in the latest technology, and because the latest technology will take us a long way towards those ESG standards, lesser the carbon footprint, and be able to sell carbon credits and everything else. So that is a very strong criteria, and but I'm happy to say again that there's a lot of people that fill the bill with the upcoming young guys, that young entrepreneurs.
Yeah, beyond the joy of owning land, it must be a great joy working with other entrepreneurs.
Absolutely. That is the best. Actually, yeah. I don't even think about owning land as a joy. I kind of think of it, I think of the tenants as the joy, working with them and taking it to the next step and so on.
Yeah.
And making them as profitable as they can be.
Yep. Yeah. What do you think is the biggest misconception about yourself and your company and what you do in the agricultural community out there?
Misconception?
Yep.
Oh, the fact that we can control the market or something like that, or the fact that like what we're doing, clearing land, and that it's all detrimental. They missed the whole point. Okay, if I clear that land the way I say, and you get a full section, 1 mile by 1 mile square, you still have those north-south corridors, the roads, or what they call that?
Road allowances?
Road allowances, right. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah, you still have road allowances north, south, east, and west that circle that full section. But if you clear that section, I easily get anywhere from 30 to up to 80% efficiency. So in other words, they can spend half the time seeding that section as they would before we cleared it, of those buried the rock piles, removed the fences and everything else. Okay, so how? What do you have? You have, let's say, harrowing, seeding, three times sprayers for different purposes, swathing and combining. Seven times a year, you duplicate that. That you say you can save 50% and do 50% more. So that means I use 50% less carbon footprint.
Interesting.
Because the tractors aren't running that amount of time, or they're doing that much more. So what does that say? You got such a small window of opportunity for seeding and doing the actual work. If you take the rains out and when it's wet and everything else, that if you can do twice as much in those 2-3 weeks, why not? Especially when I offset that by letting it grow into forest and so on my other land, because we have 40,000 acres of creeks, bush, different native grass, all kinds of different things. It's green space. So we offset it, but nobody gives me credit for that. Nobody looks at it.
That's kind of what drives me nuts about this whole thing. It's a perception thing, but wouldn't there be a great argument to make if we can make our arable land much more efficient? Then we don't have to put this marginal land in production, pour the coal to it, don't have to burn down the rainforest. I mean, using good arable land as effective as possible. Isn't that an environmental strategy?
Okay, look at your whole picture. That's another thing that the environmentalists miss totally. Canada has a very large land base, number two in the world, as far as countries are concerned. Russia is number one. Okay, we've got number two, second largest land base. Of that, 4.5% is arable land. That's it.
In Canada, sorry, you said, or Russia?
Yes.
In Canada, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
4.5%, that's all you're working with.
And what is it in Russia? Do you know? Seems like it'd be a lower percentage even because it's larger.
They have a much larger. I think Canada is one of the lowest arable land to total land mass. India is number one. And then they go U.S., China, and so on. Russia's amongst the top four, where they have 17-20% and so on. So what I'm saying, you got 4.5%, so you want to sacrifice that 4.5% yet? You got nothing left.
Right.
Yeah. So I want to make the best I can that 4.5% and make it as productive as I can, because that's all you got to work with.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, when you get perspective on how much carbon's probably captured in Canada by virtue of all of our trees and natural forests and everything.
We're way in a surplus position. We can sell carbon to the rest of the world from our boreal forests and everything else. The rest of the world doesn't come close.
Yeah. I often wonder if our time wouldn't be better spent trying to convince those amongst us on the planet that are polluting more proportionally somehow to help them transform that more than worry about our own.
Well, I found a lot of these movements, whether it's far right or far left, facts don't matter.
Just emotion.
They don't want to spend time listening to facts or data or whatever. They have a preconceived notion that they want to go with. And that's what they go with. Because these facts are available to everybody. Let's face it. I don't pull these things out of my hat and quote them. Look them up on Google. They're right there.
Well, it seems as though technology, too, with social media and whatnot, has certainly increased the level of polarization. And obviously, you just get farther and farther apart.
That is definitely true.
Thank you so much for joining us on today's episode. We really appreciate that you'd spend some of your valuable time with us. We would like to give a shout out to Stephen and Veronica and the whole team at Pod Sound School for their talent and hard work in editing and producing these episodes. Be sure to check them out at www.podsoundschool.com. Also, Nicole Duby from Eberhard Ag Solutions, thank you so much. Nicole's really passionate about making these episodes come to life and sharing them with you. Please, let's stay in touch. You can communicate with us on any of the social media platforms. You can also check us out on YouTube and sign up for our newsletter, growingthefuturepodcast.ca, so you don't miss an episode. Do not forget to check out the Eberhard family of companies online too, eberhardfarms.com, suregrowth.ca, convergencegrowth.com, and eberhardagsolutions.ca. Links are in the episode notes. We would love to hear from you. Reach out and tell us what you like about the show or what we could do to improve upon this. And we will send you some free swag. Until next episode, folks, let's keep it real, growing the future together.